Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on September 30th, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Good evening. Please welcome our host for the evening, the author of 15 books on movies and theater, and he's currently working on a book about films of the 50s. This is one of the most important ones, Foster Hirsch.
Thank you. This is a special event. This is the 60th anniversary screening of Giant, and it's on the 60th anniversary of James Dean's death. 60, yeah, right, exactly. Well, 61st anniversary of James Dean's death, but the 60th anniversary screening of this great film. Not only are you seeing the film here at the Film Forum, which is always extremely important, but we have two members of the film, Hollywood royalty, who are here tonight to talk about the film in an interview before you see it. I'd first like to introduce the son of the filmmaker, a Hollywood master named George Stevens, who won the Academy Award for his peerless direction of Giant. George Stevens Jr. is himself a distinguished producer and director and writer. He is the founding director of the American Film Institute and for decades produced the outstanding Kennedy Center Honors. He knows a lot about the making of the film, was with his father for much of the making of the film in Texas, and he tells us a wonderful story that George Stevens was not only one of the great Hollywood directors, he was a nice father. Isn't that nice to hear? George Stevens, Jr. And as time goes on, and these are 60-year-old films, there are fewer and fewer stars of the film who are still around to speak to us about the film. But we're lucky tonight because one of the principal stars, the only principal player who is still with us, is here to remember her work in Giant. She's one of the Hollywood greats, Baby Doll herself. Please welcome Carol Baker. Now, this film is 3 hours and 20 minutes, 21 minutes, no intermission, and you won't want one. Every minute of it is riveting. Why did your father decide to present the film without an intermission? That was his choice, wasn't it?
Yes, the film was actually designed with an intermission. And by coincidence, in that year, 1956, there'd really been no major film since Gone with the Wind that ran 3 hours or more. And in the late summer of 1956, there were three pictures ready for release. Giant, running 3 hours and just about 20 minutes. The Ten Commandments, and
that was 4 hours.
And Around the World in 80 Days. And they were all planned with intermissions, with the idea that it would be more like a theater experience. But Giant opened with an intermission, but quickly all three films, it was decided, were better running without an intermission. The audiences didn't seem to like it.
Okay, well, but nowadays people don't sit still. But these guys are going to sit still for 3 hours and 21 minutes.
Well,
they're not going to move because they're going to be riveted. All right, we're here to talk about the film, but also about James Dean. Carol, I know you've been asked a lot about what it was like working with James Dean. You have one or two glorious scenes with him. One of them, frankly, you steal from him. What was it like in that table scene working with James Dean?
Well, first I have to tell you that whenever I think of James Dean, it always reminds me of George Stevens Jr. We were in the projection room. It was just about the end of the film. There was Elizabeth and Rock and several other actors, and of course our director, George Stevens. And I was so fond of George Jr. We became very, very good friends. He was in the Air Force then, And he was flying around, and he was so cute because he would always fly back to Hollywood to come on the set to say hello to everybody. But at any rate, while we're watching, the lights were off, while we're watching the day's daily rushes, the lights suddenly go up. George Stevens stands up, and all the blood had rained from his face. So I just knew it was something tragic. And the first thing I thought of was my dear friend George, who was flying, that something happened to him. And George said, "Jimmy Dean has just died in a car accident."
So that was how you found out, and that was about a month after he completed his scenes.
Yes.
When you were working with him, you were both method trained, you're both Actors Studio, the other actors, most of them weren't. Did you feel you and James Dean were speaking a common language?
Yes, in a way. You know, he was very inventive, like on the porch scene, which you will see. He had learned to use the rope, and he was able to twirl the rope, which was a bit of an accomplishment. So he added things like that to the film. So one day, Rock and Elizabeth came to me, and they said, "Listen, you're the only one that can handle James Dean. You give it to him."
So there was some competition between the Hollywood actors and the New York method actors?
There was, yeah.
There was.
There was.
There
yeah.
was. I love the subtext. Now, George, I know over the years your father was frank about having problems with James Dean in the making of the film, always aware that he was a brilliant actor and giving an extraordinary performance, but he was difficult, is it fair to say, or trouble?
Yeah, Jimmy was kind of marched to his own drum, and Jimmy, my father, took a lot of time making a film, and he liked a lot of camera angles and all, and they got a little behind schedule, and Jimmy didn't like waiting around on the set, so they had a little, difficulty from time to time. But by the end of it, I know Carol, we were talking about that. Where the scene at the end, and Jimmy came to my father and said, "You know, I can't figure this out. I need." And Dad and Jimmy went on a soundstage for 2 nights, and Dad being about the age of the older man, and having been around the theater a lot as a boy, he was able to work with Jimmy, and Jimmy got comfortable with it, or much more comfortable. But Jimmy was. Enormously talented, and I think the tragedy of his death, which became sensationalized, but if you just take it in human terms, he was a wonderful actor, but I think he had his eye on being a director, and he was watching and learning, and that was really the beginning of the time when more actors were thinking about getting behind the camera. So we lost a lot when we lost him at age 24. Yeah.
Did he resist direction from your father?
Not really, but he was very inventive, as Carol said, and he'd bring a lot to the scene. And sometimes he would, having sat in the editing room, you'd see that he'd come and he'd have this little piece of business, and then he had that piece of business. And it was so interesting. But in the editing, you were able to kind of lean it out, you know, and keep the story moving. But he was gifted, I think, would be the sum of it.
Were you doing any improvisations in your scenes with him?
George wasn't encouraging improvisation. I mean,
he wanted to deliver the dialogue as written.
That. But of course, I think Jimmy was a great actor, and I think he would have gone on to be a great actor. And he was a friend of mine, and despite all his difficulties, I did like him very much, and I was sad when he passed away. But I have to tell you that he had just become a star, and he was a little brat. And George was wonderful with him. He was very patient, but really Jimmy would try anybody's patience. And he just didn't show up on the set. You didn't do that. You didn't do that. You didn't say, oh, you kept me waiting. Me, the new star, you kept me waiting. And now I'm not going to show up when you want me to be there. You don't do that. But he did.
What's fascinating about the film, which takes place over many years, is that the actors age, and there's some controversy about the makeup and the aging. We can get to that in a minute. But what's really interesting is Carol Baker plays Elizabeth Taylor's daughter. Carol Baker was 1 year older than Elizabeth Taylor.
He ratted you out.
Oh, thank you, Foster. Thank you. I needed that.
But didn't Elizabeth Taylor always announce that to everybody, that you were a year older?
How many will be seeing Giant for the first time tonight?
Oh, yeah. And how many returnees do we have? Okay, about half and half. Young people here seeing it for the first time, yeah. Which is great.
There's a wonderful article in last month's Harper's Magazine, and I think it might be an interesting way for people both who'd seen it before and who haven't. And this woman writes of Giant saying that it was a revolutionary film, and she had seen it, she's a critic, on its 30th, 40th, 50th, and 60th anniversaries. And you know, to look at this film and realize that in 1956, I don't think the word feminism was yet used. And Elizabeth Taylor is a kind of a uniquely feminist role in kind of the most interesting and humane way, I would say. And Giant was really the first major film about race. In this case, the Mexican-Americans in Texas. And as this woman pointed out, that Giant was made when Martin Luther King was in graduate school. So it was a very... And rounding that out is that it was not some kind of arch-serious polemic. It was the most successful picture that Warner Brothers had ever made, and it was very popular. But my father cared about the human condition.
And it's a 1956 film that is politically correct in today's terms, and there are very few 60-year-old films that can claim that, which is amazing. Carol, you worked with, I think, three of the, if not the greatest directors in film history. Carol worked with Kazan in Baby Doll, with William Wyler in The Big Country, and with George Stevens in Giant. They are the three best.
John Ford.
I wouldn't put him in the same category. Not in terms of acting. Not in terms of acting. But what did those three add, John Ford? What did they have in common? What did they have in common? They're all great directors. You worked with four of the best. There, three or four of the four were known as great actors, directors. What do they have in common?
Nobody who writes about films is going to like this answer. They never told an actor how to act. They cast you because they thought that you were right for the part, that you could do it, and only the bad directors are the ones that tell you how to read a line, how to define your character. The good ones let you do your job.
So well said, Carol. And I was around my father on a number of pictures on Shane and Giant and a little bit on A Place in the Sun and The Diary of Anne Frank. And what he really thought his job was to create an atmosphere where the actor was comfortable and could do her best work. And I think that ties in with what you said.
Right, and I think that's one of the reasons why he did so many takes. He wanted the actor to just relax into it and maybe you know, after doing it a number of times, come up with something a little more original.
But he wouldn't tell you what he was looking for in the scene?
Absolutely not.
But you did take after take after take. Did you like that approach, or you?
I did.
You did.
It didn't work for everyone. A slight distinction with Dad and his dear friend, fellow officer in World War II, William Wyler, is that Wyler would do as many as 70 takes. My father was more in multiple camera angles because he always felt he could fix a scene if it wasn't working, if he had these different angles to go, you know, maybe take a line out or do that. And he would take fewer takes but many more setups.
But then he stayed in the editing rooms for a year.
Yeah.
This film took 1 year in the editing process.
Yeah.
He shot an enormous amount of film and edited it down. Carol, what was your impression when you first saw the film? You were at the famous Roxy opening when people thought James Dean was going to be there in person. Is that true?
Oh, it was the first opening that I went to. And it was a great big event at the Roxy Theater in New York. They used to think of New York as important as Hollywood. They don't today, but they did then. And the rumor had gone out. Jimmy Dean had hit a note in the young people. They identified with his character. They identified with this rebel that was needed in the young people. And the rumor went out that he was still alive, that the death was just a publicity stunt, and that he was going to be there at the opening. And it's not what I expected for my first opening. I expected it to be glamorous. You walk down a red carpet and people took your photograph. Instead of that, the police couldn't handle them. All these kids came rushing in. They pushed everybody. Elizabeth was just with Mike Todd, and he was the first one, by the way, who bought her diamonds. First one. And it would be much more expensive today, but in those days it was very expensive. She had a present from him, $10,000 earrings, diamond earrings, and she was pushed, and one of them fell on the ground. So you can't imagine the pandemonium that went on.
That was your first opening.
Yes, that was my first opening.
I want to talk about Rock Hudson, who comes from a different tradition than Carol Baker or James Dean, who was studio trained. I know there's some differences of opinion about his work as a film actor. I think he became a terrific film actor, and I think he's fabulous in this film.
Yeah, he was just so perfect
for this role, mm-hmm. and perfect for film. He never overstates, and I think it was wonderful that your father cast him. Do you know the circumstance? A lot of people wanted to play that part.
My father had an awful lot of confidence in himself in terms of working with actors, and mm-hmm. and he said that he... Because they talked about William Holden and Grace Kelly and others. But he felt that it was better to have the young people, so you believe the romance of the young people rather than having older people playing young and being older than they really were in the young part. So he chose that. And Rock just kind of gave himself over to this. And, I really admire what he did. I think it's a wonderfully strong part, and he's strong in it.
Never pushing.
No.
Never pushing.
No.
Jimmy Dean does a lot of acting. It's glorious, but it's a lot of acting. You never catch Rock Hudson doing any acting.
You remind me of what Rock told me about what my father said to him. They'd be doing a scene, and Rock would be, you know... And this was early in the shooting. And he would just say to him, Rock, he said, we've got a long way to go with this story. You know? And it kept Rock from trying to do too much and to be, act.
When we were in Marfa, Texas, it was a little bit glum in the evenings. First of all, it was just like a one-street town then. I understand it's grown up a lot now. And everybody had to eat in the hotel dining room, and there was not enough accommodations for people. So, yeah, of course, Elizabeth and Rock and Jimmy had their own house. But for the rest of us, after they took all the rooms in the hotel, they had to find places for the rest of us. So I lived in an apartment with Jane Withers, Mercedes McCambridge, Fran, who played my sister, and myself, and there was one bathroom. And we had to be up very early in the morning. So the living was a little bit glum. However, Rock was the most fun person I think I have ever met. And he had a party every single night. And there was nothing else to do in Marfa. And he invited everybody. He didn't mind, you know, what kind of a small part you were playing. And he was just, he was so funny. He was such a great guy. And he threw these parties every night. And it was wonderful for us. I loved him for it.
And that humanity comes through.
Oh, and
in
Jimmy
his films.
Never went.
Did they get along? I mean, rumors were that they were not good friends, or their acting styles were so different. Their temperaments
I
were different.
I went on a weekend with Rock and Jimmy, and they got along fine.
Did they?
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, no, really. I mean, they were, you know, they were people. I just was going to say, first, I just want to say of our host, Bruce Goldstein, he does such a great service to cinema. I see the Battle of Algiers restored. You know, to have this theater in New York, and he's done it for so many years, and I just want to thank him for those of us who...
Bravo.
Before we see the film, I admire your father to no end, but I always questioned his avoidance of CinemaScope for Giant. He wanted it to be tall and not wide when the other epics were all in CinemaScope.
Right.
It's not CinemaScope. I feel I loved CinemaScope, and I think it should have been, but what was his rationale for having it tall?
He thought that wide CinemaScope screen was good for taking graduation pictures. and he felt the story was in the faces of the actors and the landscape. And if you have that wide CinemaScope screen, it's harder to get the close-ups. You know, he later did a masterful job in The Diary of Anne
Frank.
He
sure did.
But he liked the aspiration of height. And I don't want to start the film, but I just thought three insights that you should watch the film and enjoy it as a film and not as a study. But Robert Town, I read recently, described there's a wedding scene in the picture that's not at the beginning, but maybe a third of the way through. And I'm not giving much away that Rock Hudson and Elizabeth Taylor get married, but you don't see their wedding. And Robert Towne, the great screenwriter, thinks that the wedding scene in this picture is a masterpiece. And I won't give away too much, but it's clearly you haven't seen the wedding of the principals, but then you see them at another wedding. And just the power of visualization. You know, so much of film, and I just think there are two scenes. One, the man we were talking about, when James Dean paces off his land. Mm. You know, just to see how the power of music and visuals and an idea can make a scene powerful. And the return of Angel Obregon, the Mexican boy, when he comes home from the war. You know, just pure cinema, visual.
But also, I want to say, famously, James Dean was very nervous about playing an older man in the drunk scene at the end, which he never felt he got. And he said, I'm not getting the scene, but Carol Baker's reaction is so perfect. Use the scene on her reaction.
Yeah, I know. That was a great compliment. He said, I'm having some difficulty getting through the message of this scene. but keep it on her face because it says everything.
And that,
that's very touching.
It's very touching. It's very true. 3 hours and 20 minutes of glorious cinema. There are some naysayers who would say this film doesn't deserve its reputation. They're wrong. It's one of the greatest films ever made. And thank our wonderful guests for being here.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.